Bounty hunting is a complicated profession. Don't you agree?
The Cynic Radio Podcast.
Hi, I'm Chad L. Coleman, Tyrese from The Walking Dead and Cuddy from The Wire, and you are listening to the Cynic Radio Podcast. You're your host, Cynic.
Hey, the facts are Spider-Man belongs in the MCU. Sony was delusional thinking they didn't need Marvel, and now he's back. And we, the fans, are 100% proudly responsible for that.
Agree?
As long as DC wants to make dark and gritty movies, they're going to lag behind Marvel in every category.
And Ryan.
Batman vs. Superman is objectively better than Infinity War.
IG, did we just forget Kim?
You guys completely suck.
This is the greatest show of all time.
And this is episode 158 of the Cynic Radio Podcast. And I'm your smack-talking co-host, Cynic. And joining me, as always, my co-host and the greatest tag team since the Can-Am Connection, my co-host, Igri and Ryan. Guys, we're back. Did you miss us? I'll take your non-response as a solid yes. And on this week's show, we're going to do a little bit of catch-up. We're going to talk Disney Plus's She-Hulk, the good, the bad, and the controversy surrounding the show. And we're going to touch on House of Dragons because our full review is coming in the next 2 weeks. And we're going to take some time and chat about the big stories that have happened since we've been gone. All that, and just recently, Ryan and I had the honor to attend an event where George R.R. Martin was interviewed by Jersey's own Kevin Smith.
Hashtag jealous team.
I wish you could have came, buddy. We have a lot to cover, so let's get into it. Guys, I refuse to lie to you. I never read a She-Hulk comic in my life. I was less than enthusiastic when Kevin Feige stood up there and announced the show. I punched out early on Kamala Khan, if we're being honest. But I gave Jennifer Walters my best effort. And kids, boy, did this really work out for me. I enjoyed the show, and I really do want more of it. I mean, what worked for you in the show?
Well, you know, like Ryan said, the fourth wall breaking worked. And I think because they did it a lot like Deadpool fourth wall breaks, where they're so self-aware and so understanding of what's going on, that it really kind of hit. Because, you know, a lot of times things that she was saying when she was breaking the fourth wall, like, really was what I was thinking. I'm like, a wedding episode? We're doing a wedding episode in a short run thing. And she's like, really, a wedding episode? Don't worry, it's only one. And really, you know, the CGI was complained about, but I thought that for the most part, the CGI was just fine. Like, I wasn't taken out. Like, it wasn't so bad and so campy and so cartoony that it was terrible. I mean, it's really hard to do faces and things like that. And I think it worked. I mean, because how realistic is a Hulk thing anyway? And they don't have like an Infinity War level budget for this. I mean, they had a decent budget. You could tell that they put some money into it. And quite honestly, all of the different things that they put in there as far as cameos were amazing. Like bringing in Wong and the Abomination and having those things happen. And then finally, an actual MCU tie-in with Daredevil is amazing. Like, who wouldn't get amped up just for that? And it's not like he just showed up. Like, there were a couple of hints before he showed up, but then when he showed up, he got to do Daredevil stuff, which was amazing.
Yeah, we absolutely did get a hallway fight, which I was completely cheering for. For me, it was a strong female lead, pun intended. I enjoyed the character in both Jennifer and in She-Hulk forms. The writing for both were fun, smart, interesting, and they gave her depth. Jennifer, they made her very vulnerable and awkward without making her a total tool, which I loved. She-Hulk wasn't overpowered, yet she had a bit of a chip on her green shoulder, and it worked really, really well. I mean, they couldn't have done any better with capturing the essence, because I went back and read about the comic book character and I realized that I had missed a bunch about it. But at the same time, I'm glad that they went ahead and did this show, because, you know, I've got a new favorite show, and hopefully we'll get a second season. IG, what didn't work for you?
What didn't work for me for the most part was the lack of a very formidable, consistent villain. Because, I mean, that's something that I like, that most other things, and maybe it's because I like it in most other things, like, there's something that at least there's a hint of something else. And it just didn't seem like, you know, like in Loki, you know, when really kind of eventually you have Kang, right? So they had other things going on, but there's a background thing that's happening. And I didn't really get any sense of a very consistent big bad that might be lurking, because like they were kind of linking at the guy that was doing all the social media stuff, but it ended up being just a dweeb, you know. And I kind of got a hint that it wasn't anybody important, because, you know, I watch a lot of videos about reviews when these things are going on, looking for like maybe I missed something and somebody else caught it. And people were talking about, you know, people somewhat sometimes always bring up like Mephisto or something else, like that's going to be the thing, and nothing. And I would like to see some more recognizable bad guys, because like, for example, like Spider-Man's rogue gallery is full of a lot of very recognizable bad guys. And that may not be the case for She-Hulk, and they might need to cross platform some, although she was eventually a part of the West Coast Avengers, which had some very recognizable bad guys. So we just kind of need some of those things to kind of pop together. Like I didn't, the bad guys were just not bad enough.
We wanted Murdoch and we ended up with Kevin. What didn't work for me was the, and let's be fair, and I don't want to sound like Brody from Mallrats here, because for the longest time, comic book writers have been sexualizing female heroes. And for years we saw that. But in turn, now they've granted that they're kind of owning it, which I really like. But for me, I don't know how sex with a super being and a human could actually happen without catastrophic injury. I just don't think it's possible. I think something would get snapped that is probably just not repairable. I enjoyed the dating scenes. I'm kind of with you, Ig. I really wish that there was some sort of big bad involved in it. I mean, they kept pointing in several different directions, and the trail was there, but it never really ended up in anything. But that's really what didn't work with me, is that if she's banging dudes, I would have preferred it in Jennifer form. I absolutely want more of this show. I mean, the story was fun. The characters were fun. A lot of great cameos, including Daredevil, which I couldn't have been happier about. And the nice, solid conspiracy theory against her character. The dating, the heartbreak, the ups and downs of the character was a lot of fun. I'm not sure if it gets a season two, but I definitely think if the gods are good, and we're all watching you on this one, Kevin, there absolutely should be a season two. And I give the season an 8. IG, do you want more?
Well, what was Wong's like friend's name who was partying all the time? She was the best.
Was it Becca?
Madison.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I could almost watch a spinoff series with Wong and Madison, because, oh, Wonger, like it was hilarious. And I'm with you. Like, they need to keep doing stuff. And the MCU is getting so big, and so many of the people are excited and willing to do extra things. Like, I know, like, they could get Paul Rudd from Ant-Man to show up and do things, because he's willing. He's very excited to be a part of this. And I'm sure there are more, like getting people involved in cameos and episodes and things like that. I mean, they could have a lot of fun with She-Hulk because of what kind of character it is and the kind of things that they've now set up that she's allowed to do in her series. A second series would be wonderful, and there's a lot of things they could do. And if it were me, I would just try and link in a big bad that's going to maybe end up in a movie in some way. They don't have to be a major thing, but like a thread that's pulling them along in the show. And I think that would go a long ways. But yeah, I would give it probably a 7.5, not quite an 8, but I did really enjoy it.
So we're planning a full Game of Thrones House of the Dragon review following our Wakanda Forever review next week. So let's do a quick hit and see what we thought of it. After a less than stellar end to the original series, the brainchild of George R. R. Martin is giving us more, a deeper look into the legendary Targaryen family, which was pretty much almost extinct when we first caught up to him. So let's talk about House of Dragons. IG, what worked for you?
What worked for me really was the casting, for the most part, is amazing. You really had a lot of people in a lot of different families, and the one really well-known family that's represented here is the Targaryens. They didn't go back and lean on Starks and Lannisters, which I'm sure they probably will later, because, you know, it's fan service, and why not give us some fan service? But giving us diverse houses with like the Valyrians and like they all have very specific looks. Like the Valyrians all still have like the very like platinum hair just like the Targaryens. It was really kind of neat to see some of the things and see a lot of the same types of threads that happened in Game of Thrones, but happened a little bit dirtier and stronger because it was like right up front with some of the things. So the casting was really amazing for a lot of the things. I really did think it was casted extremely well.
What worked for me was definitely the dragons. Growing up, I was a huge D&D fan, obviously, and as they were the ultimate challenge because of their strength, their weapons, their sheer size, and I mean, they had the best loot. But Vhagar really kind of upsets the balance of power. We saw it in the last episode.
That's a big dragon.
That's the size of a small town. I mean, how do you even fight against that thing? It just bit through that other dragon like nobody's business. I love the detail. I love the personalities that they've given these majestic things. They all fly different. They all, scream different. They all, their breath weapons look different. It's truly amazing. It's just remarkable with what they've done with them. I mean, we saw a couple in Game of Thrones, but this is, they went above and beyond with it.
You know, the funny thing is you say that with the dragons in Game of Thrones, all three of those dragons were basically the same dragon with different color.
Yes.
And now we go into House of the Dragon and they have all these different dragons. They have like different anatomy. They have longer necks, shorter necks, big, fat, small, skinny. And like, you know, and we start to learn history of some of them. Like, you know, basically we learn that like the egg hatches and you bond with that dragon. So the one Vhagar got reassigned, basically the kid went out and took it, but that dragon's like a century old, and the one it bit was like 15, you know, so it had time to grow. And then we hear, oh well, there's these other dragons still out in the wild, one of which may be bigger than Vhagar, which is, holy cow, that's a big dragon. I was so happy that they were diverse and you could see different things. And like, rather than three, like, same color, same dragons, like, here's a green one and a black one and kind of a red one. They're all the same, though.
Yeah, and unlike the horses on HBO's canceled show Luck, I mean, none of the dragons were injured in the making of the first season. Ryan, what worked for you?
A lot worked, so I'm going to try to keep it simple. I'd say the big thing that worked for me were the performances. I think specifically, I would say Miley Alcock as Rhaenyra was maybe the best performance up until towards the end when we got when Paddy Considine decided to just knock it out of the park. But speaking of which, I think his Viserys was incredible. Matt Smith's Daemon was great. So I really think more than anything, I think the performances were really, you know, really spectacular. And especially like, you know, for season one of a show and to give us so many characters, just like Game of Thrones, but to have people that are even more memorable, I'd say than characters, especially on season one of Game of Thrones. I think the performances was the thing that really stood out. You know, also, I think it looked great. So like the costume and kind of set building was excellent. So I definitely think that it really looked, you know, it just looked fantastic, like lived in, you know, all the details were there. So I loved the armor, loved the clothes. So I think, you know, just the looks and performances were fantastic and the things that really stood out to me this season.
IG, what didn't work for you?
You know, this is going to sound bad because I'm not one to generally get on whatever somebody likes, right? But needing to visually watch somebody's kink play out with Larys and his foot fetish, I didn't necessarily think we needed as close of a look as we got at that. That was a little bit off-putting. Although I think, you know, if they're looking for shock in the show, they got it. Because, like, I didn't need to know that, like, not only did he have a strong foot fetish, but like she knew it and she was going to let him just sit there and do whatever he wanted to do for some information or to have something get done for. That didn't work for me. And that was probably the one major thing that didn't work for me. I mean, there were little minor things here and there. Like some of the wigs sometimes looked a little wonky. Mostly the straight hair blonde wigs for some of the people didn't look right, but really the visual representation of somebody enacting on their kink right there in the open for somebody who was doing it just to get something and wasn't into it themselves. So it kind of almost seemed like exploitation to me. Maybe that's why I felt bad about it.
Couple things, you know, like the CGI was sketchy at some spots. The wigs were definitely bad. I think the big thing, you know, I get very early on, there's that line, a great line too, which was, you know, that, you know, kind of men battle in the field, women battle in the birthing bed, however it was worded, it was really well done. I think it was a little excessive and gratuitous with some of the birthing scenes, you know, both successful and not. And it almost felt like, giving birth was replacing kind of the amount of rape that we had in the first in throughout Game of Thrones. And I know that they made a conscious effort not to include that in this, but then they kind of replaced it by just these arduous, like awful birthing scenes. And I get it on some level. It's like, okay, part of this is to make it uncomfortable and make it uncomfortable to watch. But it seemed like a little excessive, especially when we got to, like, you know, the fetus in episode 10. So I'd say that's probably the thing that, you know, I understand its place, but it was maybe one or two scenes too much and too excessive for my taste.
I had some issues with the time jump, but what didn't work for me, really, we've been beaten to death about the slowly developing rich and lush history of Westeros and the Targaryen dynasty, but to take a show 200 years before A Song of Fire and Ice just doesn't scratch me where I itch. Give me some of that good Robert's Rebellion. That's all I want to see. Is I want to see the Mad King taken down. I want to see the Kingslayer become the Kingslayer. I just feel like, sort of like Old Republic in Star Wars, I feel like this era is just way too far disconnected from the era that I actually give a shit about. So I'm kind of hoping that in the future we get something, you know, like Snow that's attached one way or the other to what we've previously saw. Do I want more of it? Yeah, I do. I mean, it's already been renewed for season 2, which I'm excited about. I mean, all the dragon goodness in it. The war is coming. The characters are developing. I want to see the princess become the queen and sit on the throne. And I have a feeling that's where we're headed. Although I didn't read these books, so I'm not quite sure. Sometimes I feel like it's better going into something not knowing what's going to happen. Just recently, we went through The Shield and I had never seen it before. And I loved all the twists and turns in it because I had no idea what was coming next. How about you, IG? Do you want more?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. I'm still like, just like you are, like I've watched a few videos to like history of the dragons and things like that. But, you know, I want to see like all of the things going on, the political intrigue, the actual fighting. You know, I'm team black all the way, but team green's got a pretty strong bench. So, I mean, we know that team black wins, right? We know that the Targaryens kind of come through and that the line comes from Rhaenyra just based on where actual Game of Thrones went and looking at everything going on there with Viserys and everything, like we know where it goes, but that doesn't mean I don't want to see how it happened. Cause even if like some of the stuff in some of the books that's been written, it's not, the showrunners have already shown some of the things that they're going to deviate and stuff, and maybe it's going to be better. And that's what I'm hoping for, because the material that's out there is written based on George R. R. Martin's stuff, but it's not written by George R. R. Martin. So they have a little bit of leeway in where they're going to go. Like when it's stuff written, and the thing is the showrunners changed things in the original Game of Thrones that George wrote. And I think they aired, and that's why the end didn't end as good as it could have. But this so far has been amazing, and I'm on board. Like, you know, give me at least a few more seasons, because I like that they don't try and move too fast, except for the massive time jump in the middle of there for no reason.
So I read the book that it's based off, which is kind of, it's an interesting read because it reads like a history text rather than like a standard novel. So knowing where it goes, what I do like about both the source material and this is that I think even knowing where it goes, there's so many crazy twists and turns. And I think that the showrunners did a great job of adding context to things. Like, you know, when you have a novel, I think the context is all there. In a book like this, there are certain chat passages where it's like a paragraph that the showrunners then can then take and make it feel real, because it's like reading a history text versus like actually getting something, you know, getting a narrative work. So I feel like they did a great job of translating what was on the page to what's on the screen. So I think they're doing a great job, and just knowing what's coming out of this, I'm really excited to see what they do with it, because there's so much rich material to build off of, and a lot where, like, even if you know where it's headed, there's so much in the middle that I have no idea how they're going to get there, that I'm really excited to see where it goes. I think they really did knock it out the park. My only fear is that Miguel Sapochnik, who is one of the showrunners and directors, is not going to be attached to it for next season. So I'm just hoping that doesn't bring the quality down. But otherwise, I'm really excited, and I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be really, really a great show.
And we're going to get back into this again in about 2 weeks. I think we're doing Wakanda Forever next week. And then after that, we're going to do a full House of Dragons review. But since we've been off, and yes, we've been on hiatus for a while, we tend to take more time off than Howard Stern. Some key stories have happened in our geekdom. The Spear is developing around us. First and foremost, not to blow my own horn, but your man Cynic has been calling for it for at least a year now, and it's happened. James Gunn has been handed the Kevin Feige creative reins in DC. I'm super excited about this. I mean, I hope they can form a clear-cut path forward and save the cinematic universe. And I believe that James is the right guy to fix this ship. What do you think, IG?
Well, I look at the DC universe and the movies that have worked and the movies that have had huge potential and maybe not reached that potential, right? You look at Wonder Woman, was great. Wonder Woman 2, not as good. You look at the Suicide Squad, the second one, really fun, all kinds of cool things, and it spawned Peacemaker, which both are run by James Gunn. They were amazing things to watch. But then you look at the first Suicide Squad and a slew of other movies, including Justice League, that had such great potential and just were trying too hard to be something that they don't need to be. Superhero movies generally are uplifting things, things that, like, when you leave, you feel good. And they'd spent so much time in a lot of them trying to drag you down a little bit that I think they're missing the mark. And James Gunn, having started, in his comic book career, like making the Guardians of the Galaxies movies and things like that, shows that you can take serious subject matter and very possibly depressing things and make them exciting and fun and funny and just really do a good job. Sometimes I think he goes a little too far on the humor, but you need to take a little bit different direction. And it's just one of those things that I think he's a good step for DC, because somebody needs to come in and oversee the whole thing like Kevin Feige does at Marvel. Somebody needs to be the green check, red check, let's make a solid decision so we can keep some continuity going on, because there's been like a lot all over the map in DC for far too long. They need something to bring it into not necessarily a straight and narrow line, but more in line with each other.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think if you're going to bring somebody in for that role, I think it makes sense for him with his track record and his success and what he's done in his short time with DC. My fear is that that DC is trying to, which they've been, right, ever since really the Batman versus Superman, trying to mimic, the MCU, and but rush it without laying the groundwork that they did lay for that. So my only fear is, and then with the Warner Brothers Discovery being all over the place, not knowing what they want, like, I'm just a little afraid that it's not a James Gunn problem, but just are the studio heads, do they know what they want, and are they going to give him, the appropriate, amount of, leash to control this. Like, and that I guess is a fear, is that they're either going to want too much or not know what they want or constantly change and not let him really try to right the ship and take the reins. So I think that's my fear. But if you're going to have somebody in that role, I think he's the right guy. And, hopefully he can kind of get things on. The only other thing I would say is that I hope I do like that, the solo movies, the Jokers and the Batman, and I still want movies like that are not part of some extended universe, because I think those have been consistently the best movies. I hope that they're able to get, right this ship, because they've got great characters and great stories to tell. And again, he's the guy to do it. We'll just hopefully Warner Brothers Discovery doesn't get in his way.
No longer does he get in the door, but there's rumors that he's already butting heads with Dwayne The Rock Johnson, that he may have some issues with the Gunn's ideas or where he's headed with the DCU. After his problems with the creative people with Fast and Furious, do you think Vin Diesel, Ryan, is somewhere smiling? Maybe this is the pattern with The Rock?
Yeah, maybe, you know, I don't know. Like, I think with anybody, it's like all PR, right? Like, he gives off the impression that he seems like a pretty good guy, but who knows? And it's like, if they're butting heads, I'm going to take, you know, James Gunn's side, obviously, in something like that. I think in The Rock's case, he's obviously going to have his character and his story, you know, in mind, and want that to be more prominent than anything else. And I don't know what their issues are, but hey, let him do his own thing if they can't, you know, work something out. But again, like I would still stay on. I'll take James Gunn on this, and hopefully, you know, Warner Brothers does too.
You've done one movie, and maybe you were the driving force behind getting Superman back, but that doesn't mean Black Adam is going to beat Superman in a movie. You're going to lose movie fights because you chose to play a villain. So I hope that's not the issue, but we'll wait with bated breath. I think they'll be able to figure it out. And if not, then somebody else can always play Black Adam.
You know, Superman is the guy in DC. So, you know, you look at who is the guy in Marvel, and there's a couple of them, but they're like S-tier superheroes, you know, Captain America and Iron Man and Spider-Man. Spider-Man especially is like the number one draw for Marvel Comics. So you can't like overtake that and say, well, how come Spider-Man gets top billing in this Spider-Man movie? Well, because he's Spider-Man, you know, like you want to bring back Superman. Now you did it in a cameo. Okay. This is still a Black Adam movie, but if we're going to do other Justice League stuff, man, Superman's the guy. And he's been the guy in DC since the 20s. He's been there for a long time, and he will continue to be there because it's Superman, right? Like how do you think you should play top fiddle over Superman? Maybe you should have chased somebody to say, hey, let's recast Superman. I'll be Superman if you wanted to be the guy. Otherwise, like, understand that Black Adam in the books is like a C-tier character, and be happy that the fans so far like the C-tier character because you're playing it well, but you can't overtake Superman. You just like you can't overtake Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, and some of the other things. They just are the top tier. Those are the most well-known DC characters of all time. You just can't overtake them as Black Adam because even Shazam is more well-known and he's much lower than Superman.
Well, and I thought that's where they were headed was a face-off with Shazam, but he jumped opponents, went right to Superman.
Yeah, ran right past Shazam to Superman.
Yeah, he's just standing there like, what the fuck? Who am I going to fight in the next movie? All right, so let's not dive into the shallow end of the political pool, but I want to talk about this because a lot of people are. Elon Musk purchased Twitter. It was the worst kept secret in the world. He'd been talking about it, and then they forced him legally to do it. Ryan, smart move or a $44 billion mistake?
I think it's a $44 billion mistake. And I don't know that it's like, you know, I heard the analogy early the other day. You know, it's like the dog that caught the squirrel. I don't know that he knows what he's doing or had a plan for it. So I think it was kind of like started as a troll. I think he didn't think he was going to be strong armed into, you know, moving forward with the deal. And guess he decided to go through with it. But, you know, yeah, politics aside, whatever my thoughts on Elon and Twitter aside, like, I just think it was a bad move. I don't know how he recoups the money. Who knows? We'll see. I mean, I've never been tied to Twitter. So like, I have accounts. I rarely use them. I don't, you know, I'm not going to stop, nor am I, you know, likely to like cancel my account because I just don't use it. I don't care.
Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see. But it doesn't look like it's going to work out well with the amount of people quitting, with the amount of fake accounts, with the I'm going to charge $8 for the blue check mark. I mean, it's a lot less than the 20 they originally proposed, but and then he comes in and he lays off half the workforce. IG, do you think he might have bit off a little more than he can chew?
He definitely doesn't have any idea what he's doing. He's not absolutely sure about how any of it works. He honestly, he's known for all these other businesses, right? Tesla, SpaceX, the internet business, the boring company with the flamethrowers and things like that. But I don't know how many people know that he didn't develop any of those businesses. He didn't develop any of the tech that they use. None of that's his. He from some family wealth, bought his way into those other things and then was the front man when they went big. So he bought in at the right time and made a bunch of money. And so now he's the rich kid with the ball, and he's going to take his ball and go home because he didn't like, you know, kicking up certain people, certain like weird haired people with funny colored skin off of Twitter. So he's going to be the big kid and buy, take the ball and go home and make decisions on things. And like, who wants to pay for a blue check mark? Like, you know, the reason that's there is so that like, if you want to go like send a message to Tobey Maguire, like that's Tobey Maguire. We've verified that that's him. You know, you're not sending it to at real Spider-Man and it's just, you know, some pervert sitting in the back corner of a hallway somewhere, like sending out tweets. There's a reason to have those things and to charge people for them. Like you're unnecessarily monetizing a platform in a way that shouldn't be monetized that way. And what does Elon Musk know about social networks? Well, in as much as he knows about cars, which is nothing. And so he's going to learn that this was a big mistake, lots of money lost, and to lay off half the workforce like weeks after buying it, that's nuts. Those are the people that make it work. And when it stops working, that's going to be why, because bringing those people back in, if I was an ex-Twitter employee and he wanted to bring me back in because like I'm somebody that can make this work, you're going to pay me a ton of money to come back in.
We'll be around to see what happens with that. Hopefully for the people working there that it is a success and they continue doing business and maybe they get things straightened out, like all the, you know, racial overtone there and all the fake accounts and all the porn and, you know, human trafficking. He definitely has a mess on his hands. So hopefully he won't get disinterested in a few weeks and just kind of wander off and everybody's kind of left in the lurch. But I just, $44 billion is a lot of money. And it's not like he just had it in his pocket because he had to go and take loans to get it. It was a boast that became a problem. Yeah. He's like, oh, well, how much do you think they want for Twitter? And next thing you know, he's locked in legally to buy it. So be careful what you say on social media because it could come back and bite you. On Thursday, November 3rd, Team Cynic and Team Ryan made the slow ride down the Garden State Parkway, the sleepy little hamlet of Highlands, New Jersey, hometown of Clerks Kevin Smith, where he has purchased a movie theater and started running special events. I believe this was one of the first ones. And the first big one was An Evening with Curious George, which was about a two-hour interview with George R.R. Martin. Ryan, we both dug deep for those VIP tickets. Was the juice worth the squeeze?
Yeah, it was definitely worth it. I mean, the price for those VIP tickets was like $70, right? Versus like the regular admission, which was like $30 or $25, $30, something like that. So like at that price, like we got seating early, which was good. Although it was a small space, so I feel like there wasn't a bad seat in the house. And then we got a signed book. You know, I feel like that alone was worth the price. You know, it was like $300. Okay, that's a different calculation, but for $70, totally worth it. I'd pay that again. So yeah, it was absolutely worth it.
Yeah, I mean, we got the book. It would have been nice if we would have been able to get whatever we wanted autographed. But you know, they're hawking the book, so I'm sure that was sort of some of the price of the ticket. And we got a Kevin Smith autograph, like on a bookmark, which I thought was pretty cool. You know, it's sitting on my desk now. Overall, yeah, it was worth it. I think I would absolutely do it again. I was interested in some of the names he was throwing out there, but I'm not going to say them until they're a real thing. What was your overall opinion, Ryan, of the guys that brought us the Starks and the Lannisters and the Targaryen?
Well, I really like the interview. I think there was, you know, I like hearing us, you know, for like for creative people, you know, their journey and what got them to that point and, you know, where, you know, what inspires them and how they got started and you know, what adversity they face and how they fight through that. Because I think it's such a, it's so challenging to make stuff up for a living. Right. And be successful at that. And I think there's so many people who are very good who never find success, and many people who are not so good who find lots of success. And so it's always interesting to hear somebody's journey. So I did like that aspect of it, that they really kind of got, you know, went deep into also his kind of connection to fandom and like how, you know, he kind of is part of the first kind of comic cons and his, you know, love of comics. And so I really, and just like I said, his journey. So I like that we got a lot about that. And, you know, it's funny because being a fan of Kevin Smith and someone who listens to, you know, a number of his podcasts. He is somebody who likes to talk. And early on, he said, this is one person who likes to talk as much as me. And that was definitely the case because George R. R. Martin could talk and could tell a story. And it was one of the few times, you saw Kevin Smith just silent, just happy to, just listen along. So that part was cool too.
All right. So here's some things that I noticed about George. He's in his mid-70s. And he's every bit of a gentleman in his mid-70s. He can talk, and he's young at heart, but he's not moving around well. You can tell that he's a little bit of an older guy, hard time getting up and down on stage. He was a great interview, but the reason why the Winds of Winter aren't done is writing is not easy for this guy. And you can tell why it's not easy, because it's a labor of love with him. He needs the perfect setting. He needs the perfect mood. He needs the perfect breakfast, lunch, and dinner before he can sit down and write a page. Kevin made a joke about, well, I could write, I don't even want sex when I'm writing. But it was for him. It's now everything's got to be writing central. So the one thing that I didn't love about the interview was Game of Thrones almost became a dirty word in the conversation. He wasn't talking about it. He'll talk about everything leading up to it and what happened after he made it. And, I found it super interesting that TV forced him kind of back into writing because he just couldn't make it in TV. But it was TV that made his writing famous ultimately. So I thought that was a very cool part of the interview. But I hope he gets working on that book because I'm a little worried we're not going to ever see it. And like you brought up, Ryan, I thought Kevin did a really good job leading the interview. I thought he was fun, engaging, and I didn't think he made it about himself. There was points where a few of his jokes, I caught a little bit of a maybe slightly annoyed vibe from Mr. Martin. But I thought Kevin did a rather remarkable job moving it along. I wish he would have pressed him a little more about characters and details. And we don't need to know what's going to happen in the next book, but I would like to hear some of his decisions, like, or even how he felt about the ending of the original series, anything related to the show. As much as I appreciated hearing about his career and his life, I wanted to hear about the thing I was there for, which was Game of Thrones. So that frustrated me a little bit, but I still had a good time. Overall, what were your thoughts on the event, Ryan? And would you attend another?
Well, yeah, I would definitely attend another, either with George R. R. Martin or just anyone else. I think I like the atmosphere. I think Kevin Smith is a really good host. And when he needs to kind of interview and be quiet, he's very good at that too. He is a good interviewer. And definitely, as much as he likes to talk, he's able to kind of take a step back and allow, the other person room to talk. So I would definitely attend another event. And he did mention several that I'd like to. It's a bit of a trek to get out there. Thursday night may be kind of tough for me, especially with being at work at 6 a.m. the next morning. So hopefully like anything else he has is on like a Friday or a Saturday, which is a little bit easier for me. But I would definitely do it again. I really enjoyed the event. I wasn't as bothered as you were by not discussing Game of Thrones. I kind of expected that, so maybe that was part of it. I just kind of figured, I'm sure he gets asked so much about that. And I think one of the nice good things about Kevin Smith interviews is he tends to not focus on the things that most people are going to focus on. So maybe I went in with that expectation, and sure enough, that was the case. Like there really wasn't much. Much discussion of Game of Thrones, which I was cool with, because I did like as somebody who likes to write as a hobby tell stories, albeit not very good. I think that was something that's inspiring for me and makes me want to write. So I think that part of it worked for me. And I left like I gotta get on whatever I'm working on. So I kind of like that aspect of it, and that kind of motivated me. So I definitely would attend it again, whether it was with George R. R. Martin or anybody else. Especially a couple that he mentioned that we definitely need to check out. But I really enjoyed the event.
Yeah, I would definitely do it again. I mean, look up the theater, look up what he's got going on. It's the spaces are small, so it's limited capacity. But I do think you get your money's worth. And there's some great restaurants. The parking was a little bit hinky because it's in the center of town, so there are no dedicated lots. But overall, the experience was great. And I got to shake Kevin Smith's hand, which I've been waiting to do for 20, 25 years now. He worked the line before the show. Made it a point to meet everybody that was there on time, Ryan.
Did you wear your overcoat?
I did not, but I probably grinned like an idiot the whole time he was talking to me. So I was excited about it. It was fun. It was neat being in the room with two of my idols. So I would definitely do it again. I suggest anybody that's within driving distance, definitely look it up, and I think you'll enjoy it. So I think that's about all the time we have for this week. Next week, we're going to jump into that Wakanda Forever movie, and I think it's really going to be a good one. It looks like it's going to be almost 3 hours long. So, you know, use the bathroom and eat your bring some snacks and, you know, get a good night's sleep before you go to see it, because nobody wants you snoring next to them. So until next time, IG.
Don't get captured.
Follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and at cynicradio.com. Available for download on iTunes.